Does this make you want to try and use a halfling thief, give it a sword and a helmet, and just see what sort of damage it can wield?
It's called a gnome giant bane stalker, and I've played two of them, and they're amazing. Yes.
One moment here.
Nerd!
Moving on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of The Prep Area. I'm RJ Retro, alongside the nefarious geneticist Shadowmeld, and it's about time we return to the origins of our show, really. The first show we ever did was Shields, and now you finally get your opportunity to build teams based on masks, and more masks.
Yes, sirree. Everybody is wearing a mask in this episode. You won't be able to tell any of our characters unless we tell you their names.
Which we will do. We will also tell you their cost and a whole lot more. And you know what? We did a bit of a Halloween theme last week. We're going to do it again this week. 6 feet under and so forth. All the dead, blah, blah, blah. This one, it's a little bit more mysterious. It's a little bit more, I don't know, masky? Is that a word? I think it is for the rest of this episode.
I think almost any woman would tell you masks are sexy. So we'll call this one a little more sexy.
This is a little bit more sexy, and this team that you've created is a little bit manipulative as well. We're calling it the Maskers of Manipulation. This is our economy team for this week based on masks, and I'm just going to throw this out there right now. 7 of the 8 characters that Shadowmeld has put on this team are masks, so we'll get this underway. First off, it doesn't get more sexy than Mr. Fantastic, the brilliant scientist, because I'd argue that having a brain and using it all the time is very sexy. He's from the AVX set. 3 dice on the card, a 3-cost mask, Fantastic Four affiliation. Mr. Fantastic gets +2/+2 when he blocks, and is global. Pay a mask, and a target character must attack this turn.
Anytime you're running globals that you want to use on your opponent's turn, forcing your opponent to attack creates less of a burden on you to decide when and how to use those globals, which is why this global, especially since we're likely to have more masks than our opponent, really works to our advantage. To follow that up, we also have lots of reasons in this team why we want our opponent to attack, and forcing him to attack is basically our form of removal.
It's going to work really well. Keeping with the sexiness theme on this team, which we didn't discuss beforehand, but I'm going with it. If you have that, you know, sexy man, sexy lady in your life, put a ring on it. That's what we're doing here. 2 dice on this card. Ring of Magnetism. Action. Attraction. Oh, very attractive. From the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set. 3-cost mask. Uncommon. Play on a monster. Your opponent's action dice and abilities can only target that monster.
This card's just amazingly powerful. And for a 3-cost mask card, that's really great and efficient for us. We're going to be using a bunch of basic actions on our team. And this is one of the cheaper mask basic actions. Unlike most of the basic actions, which have generic energy, this one actually rolls masks for you, so he doesn't interfere with your ability to purchase or pay for your globals. So even if you miss on the very powerful action face, you still get really good economy out of buying this die. So always grab at least one of them. At the very least, put it on a sidekick, just so you hinder what your opponent can do on his turn.
Keeping with the sexy theme, as one of the reserve pool founders once said, maybe on your honeymoon after you've put the ring on it and you're about to celebrate, maybe you're up all night to roll Loki. And that's what you might do with this team, because we have Loki from the AVX set. 2 dice on the card, the 5-cost mask villain. This one is a rare card. When fielded, choose an opponent's character card, canceling all previous choices. Your opponent cannot field that character while Loki is active. This effect lasts until you field another Loki.
All right, so Loki is one of the main parts of our combo for this team. One thing he does is dramatically hinder your opponent by preventing them from fielding, say, a Serena. Your opponent decides to rush you and buys 4 Serenas. If you buy just this Loki, he no longer can field the Serenas, and now he has to buy another answer while the 4 Serenas are clogging up his bag. It's a really great card for just providing an answer to the one character you didn't have another answer for. He's also relatively cheap for his stats, and he's a villain in case we need villains, and he also combos with another card.
I'm guessing it's probably this next card we are talking about. From the Age of Ultron set, two dice on the card, Loki's Scepter, Piercing, 4-cost mask, the rare. Place this die into your field zone. You may move it to your used pile to KO an enemy character that did combat damage to you and prevent that damage from that character. Send this die to the used pile at the end of your opponent's turn. If you happen to roll it on its burst faces, return this die to the prep area if your Loki is active.
So we put our Loki out, we shut down his Serenos, he decides to go and buy a Hulk with all that fist energy. Well, we just put one Loki Scepter out in the field and use a mask and force Hulk to attack us, and Hulk attacks us, dies, and does no damage. Meanwhile, we put Loki Scepter back on the field, and we are good to go. Pretty great combo, in my opinion. Probably why I made it. It does require two rares, and I know most of you who are here for our economy teams really like just the one rare, but this week, I decided Loki and Loki Scepter are rares that you'll want to have together, so it just made sense.
I think that's fair. It makes sense to me. And another character that makes sense on this team is Doctor Strange, Master of the Mystic Arts from the AVX set. 3 dice on the card, 6-cost mask, uncommon. While Doctor Strange is active, each time you use an action, he deals 2 damage to a character or opponent, no matter how many dice are fielded.
So, we talked about Loki and Loki Scepter being part of the combo. The other piece of the combo is Doctor Strange. And while he's active, every time you play the Scepter, which is going to constantly recycle every turn, you do 2 damage to your opponent. So you start, if you get 1 or 2 Scepters in rotation, you're doing 2 or 4 damage to your opponent every turn. Meanwhile, you have one of their characters locked down with Loki, and you have Doctor Strange, who has humongously ridiculous stats. He's a 4-6 at level 1 for a 6-cost. That's amazing. He's 8-9 on his level 3 face. Again, just crazy good. And he's still doing chip damage to your opponent while being on the field. So you're forcing them to attack into this big, giant Doctor Strange, or even this Loki, who can block, I don't know, 5-7-8 attack. And you're forcing them to attack in, and you're slowly whittling away their field while chipping away at them with this action die. And when you finally get a clear field, what do? You attack in with these low-cost characters and use this guy.
I'm going to do you a favor now. You have Loki on the field with defensive stats of 5-7-8. You've got Mr. Fantastic with 5-6-7, and you have Doctor Strange with 6-8-9. Now, for all three of these characters, the defense is much higher than the offense. So what happens if you want to do a lot of damage to your opponent's face because they've got nothing in their field? Well, you can use Ant-Man Pym Particles, a very common card, although uncommon, from the Uncanny X-Men set. 2 dice on the card, 3-cost fist, Avengers affiliation. Ant-Man gets +2 defense while attacking. Global, pay a fist. Switch the attack and defense values of one of your characters.
Exactly. So Mr. Fantastic now becomes a 5-1 or a 7-2. Loki becomes a 5-1 or an 8-2. And Doctor Strange becomes a 6-4 or a 9-8. Those guys are big, giant beasts for what they do. And if you've cleared their board by forcing them to attack into your scepters, and then you now have a wide open field, you can just swing in and kill your opponent in very, very few turns. Of course, in order to clear the field, we're going to need a bunch of masks for Mr. Fantastic's global, and also to pay for our resources. And to get all those masks, we buy Morphing Jar.
And we have the Morphing Jar, Canopic Jar, from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set. 4 dice, 1-cost mask, and no text on the card. It's there because it's a beasty character, a lot of strong stats on it for a 1 or 2 cost, really, in my humble opinion. But then also we have Professor X recruiting young mutants, the common 6-cost mask, X-Men affiliation, 2 dice on the card. For its PXG, pay your mask, move up to 2 sidekick dice from your used pile to your prep areas. So Morphing Jar plus Professor X equal plenty dice that you are rolling on your turn.
Plenty of dice. So between Professor X and Morphing Jar, you get all the economy you could ever need. It'll allow you to pay for all the mass globals we have. Professor X's global, Mr. Fantastic's global, and both of our basic action globals.
Now we have two basic actions that are very common. First off, Distraction. I'm willing to wager we're never going to buy it, so I'm just going to go right to the global. Pay a mask to remove one attacker from the attack zone to the field. And Polymorph, which we may buy. Swap a field character with a non-sidekick character from that player's used pile. Spin the character to level 1. This does not trigger when fielded effects. Global, pay a mask, spin one of your characters down a level to spin another character up a level. Now, why these two on this team?
Polymorph really helps Doctor Strange spin up, but it's also just a really great removal tool. We can buy it and get rid of characters we don't want our opponent to either attack us with or what have you. So we can just have a polymorph to swap them out. It also helps with our high fielding cost Loki and our high fielding cost Doctor Strange. And also even Mr. Fantastic has a decently high fielding cost. So polymorph just helps us swap, say, a morphing jar, which has almost no fielding cost, and we really want to be cycling for masks, for one of our better characters almost immediately after we purchase it. So anytime you have three energy and none of its masks, you could pick up polymorph and not feel bad about it.
So here we are with a team what we call Maskers of Manipulation. You've played this team many a time, and I know you've had other people testing it as well. What are sort of the early turn buys that you're looking at purchasing, and also what are you looking to do with this team?
So you really want to get at least one mask on turn one. Preferably you want to get two masks. Four masks would be amazing. Then you could buy two morphing jars and PXG for seven dice on turn two. But however many masks you can get, do it. If you get sidekicks, that's not terrible. You can put the sidekicks out on the field and thin your bag and get the morphing jars up and cycling. But you want to get your ramp up as high as you can so you can get Doctor Strange as soon as possible. He's arguably more important to get than Loki, because he's actually what wins you the game, where Loki just helps you do it more efficiently and faster and hinders your opponent. In the meantime, though, if you only get, say, two masks and two other energy, buy either a Mr. Fantastic if your opponent is going aggressive, or buy a Ring of Magnetism if your opponent is going control. That way you can hinder their plans with your plans. Especially if your opponent has a Ring of Magnetism that they can purchase, the person who plays Ring of Magnetism first wins. So get on that. Get your Ring of Magnetism out so that they have to play their Ring of Magnetism on the same character you do, because that's how it works.
Maskers of Manipulation, we hope you will try this team and let us know exactly how it worked for you. Lots more masks coming up in this episode. In fact, I'm going to step away for just a few minutes. Shadow Meld will come right back with Shadow Meld's Laboratory. We're going to talk Mystique in just a few moments. You're listening to The Prep Area here on the Reserve Pool Network.
Welcome to Shadow Meld's Laboratory. We're going to be talking about Mystique Shapeshifter. I absolutely love this card. She's a 6-cost mask villain from the AVX set, and she has the ability, when fielded, choose an opponent's character card. Mystique copies that card, except for purchase costs and the die faces, until the next Mystique is fielded. On her burst face, she also copies the die faces, matching level for level. Back in the days when I used to play Magic the Gathering, there was a card in almost every set that copied one of your opponent's characters or cards or whatever, and they were always known as shapeshifters, which is, I think, where the homage for this name came from. This Mystique does exactly what those Magic the Gathering cards used to do. She copies your opponent's cards basically word for word. Unlike in Magic, though, in Dice Masters, Mystique can copy a card that your opponent doesn't even have access to yet. And I love this card for it. Your opponent may be bringing along some high-cost card just for its global. Mystique can copy that card and put it into the field to work against your opponent. She may take a little bit of ramp to get to because she's a 6-cost, but she's such a flex pick and option to use your opponent's team against them. One of the things about Dice Masters is sometimes you just don't have the right answer, but your opponent planned for his own team and quite often brings the own answer to counter the mirror match. This Mystique can do that for us. So let's talk about how you get to use her appropriately. One of the best ways to use this Mystique is a rather subtle mechanic that most people might overlook, because when they look at this card at face value, they're saying, I'm paying 6 to get a 1-1 on 2 faces? That's not worth it. But if you sit and you read her text, you realize that you can spin her up to the level 3 face, and that burst will trigger. It doesn't have to be... She doesn't have to have the burst when you field her. And that is what makes this card so solid. What you can do is you can field her at level 2 for free, spend 1 mask to polymorph her up with the polymorph global, or if you have the Wonder Woman Trinity War OP card, you can field Mystique and KO a character and spend Mystique up for free. Any of these things can help Mystique get to the level she needs to be in order to get to that level 3. And why do you want the level 3? It's so that she's not a 1-1 that you paid 6 for, but she's instead the 9 or 8-7 that you copy their Blue Eyes White Dragon for. So you put Mystique out in the field, you copy their Blue Eyes White Dragon, Mystique's level 2. You use the Blue Eyes White Dragon's ability, which KOs one of your sidekicks, to give you +3 attack. So Mystique is now an 11-7 dragon. You paid 6-4 and fielded for free. That is a crazy solid ability for a card. And as popular as Blue Eyes is right now, she makes such pressure on your opponent by putting her out on the field, especially if you're using an Overcrush team. I mean, 11-7, that's crazy. Other characters that you may want to target with Mystique, Red Dragon. In fact, any dragon is a good one for Mystique because you can field her. Even at level 1, she still sports the breath weapon, so she can still clear all the sidekicks. If you buy her as a 6 cost just so you can copy their Red Dragon, even if you roll her at level 1, pay the 1 fielding cost and then the 2 or 3 for the breath weapon, she did her job. You know, that's a 6 cost that you use to clear the board and do 3 damage to your opponent. And she may die this turn, but you get her right back and you can field her again. She's so cheap to field relatively. I mean, total fielding cost 3 is nothing. And the fact that she's versatile, every time she dies, you can bring her back out and target something else. Such a solid character. You could also use her to target your opponent's Professor X trainer to give all your sidekicks +1 attack, and just leave her on the board and constantly get the bonus. You can use her to copy your opponent's Hulk so that you start a Green Goliath War. And if she's at level 3, due to the rules that they added for copying stats, she maintains her burst face on level 3. So she can be an 8-8 Hulk that still bursts for 3. That is crazy. That is better than a regular Hulk. You could also copy things like your opponent's Jocasta, so they don't want a nasty boy. She may be 1-1, but the first source of damage she takes any turn, she automatically returns to your opponent's face. So she could block anything and stay alive and do damage to your opponent. One thing I've seen that would be perfect for her is you copy your opponent's Zombie Magneto before he can buy it. Turns off all of his low-cost characters, and you didn't even have to bring Zombie Magneto. She's the same cost as Zombie Magneto. It's so solid. JT brings the Colossus Phoenix Force team. You could copy Colossus and put Colossus in the field. And in case you're not aware, Colossus's ability says, at the end of your turn, kill the thing with the lowest cost. And since Mystique is a 6 cost, if you have her out, you're going to kill at least one thing on your opponent's turn at the end of your turn so that they don't get it. They have to re-roll it. And that's just a free ability for her sitting on the board. Spin her up, she's like a 7-7 Colossus. That's so good. Another thing that I've seen people playing lately is Thanos. If she copies Thanos, she can't get her own tokens, but she can copy the Thanos at about the same rate that you can buy and field her at about the same rate that your opponent would be able to get discounts and buy his own Thanos. Meanwhile, you're already overcrushing and attacking with it, and he's still trying to build up counters. It's just her ability to copy high-end, high-cost cards is so strong, especially when you compare to the fact, or when you add in the fact that she can switch between choices. You know, they have a Blue Eyes and a Red Dragon and a Thanos. Well, you get to pick every time she dies and comes back to try a different strategy. And that is what makes this girl so strong and so powerful. She's a bit of an investment, but if you use it, she can turn the game around for you. This has been Shadow Mode's Laboratory. Talk to you later.
Did you know that the highest ranked player on the Reserve Pool Network can be heard on this podcast? In fact, as of this recording, I think he is number 19 in the U.S. But don't tell that nefarious geneticist that he isn't number one anymore. I never know what he might be brewing up against me. Next week on the Prep Area Podcast, join me, Isaac, as I bring you another topic looking at the competitive scene and how you can move from a casual kitchen table player into the world of competitive play in a segment we like to call the Transition Zone. See you next time.
And now, step into the attack zone for another six-pack. Hey everybody, it's Dave here, and we are bringing you a blast from the past with this six-pack. We are going to look at Uncanny X-Men. You know, I think it's something that we all do from time to time. We get so obsessed with the new hotness that's out there right now that we forget that there are some great sets. And maybe you did have the chance to draft the heck out of Uncanny X-Men when it was out. Maybe you did not. Maybe you are looking to change the format up at your store. If so, look at some of these older sets. There is still things to look at from them. There are still new ways that we start to understand how to play the cards. So let's look at the Uncanny X-Men six-pack. I do have actually 12 here. Perhaps we should start changing the name, but six-pack just sounds so darn good. So, in our first pack, at common, we have Falcon. He's blank. We also have two of the Ant-Man biophysicists. He's blank as well. We have Professor X recruiting young mutants. When fielded, search your bag for up to two sidekicks and roll them. Global, pay mask, move up to two sidekick dice from your used pile to your prep area. We have Storm, Weather Witch. Storm takes no damage from action dice in Global. Pay mask, change the target of an action die that targets a character die to the character of your choice. Finally, we finish off the commons with Pyro, St. John Elder Dice. When Pyro is blocked, he deals one damage to your opponent. Right away, I look at this and I say, I have Professor X in that Global. That's probably my first pick, because of what it allows me to do. But let's move forward and see what else we have. At Uncommon, we have Quicksilver Villainous. When he is fielded or knocked out, deal two damage to each X-Men character to play, including yours. We have Ant-Man, Pym Particles. Ant-Man gets plus two defense while attacking. Global, pay fist to switch the attack and defense values of one of your characters. We have Red Hulk, a.k.a. Rulk. When he's active, when an opposing sidekick is knocked out, your opponent loses one life, no matter how many Red Hulk dice you have fielded. First, if Red Hulk knocks out a sidekick, your opponent loses two additional life. We have Professor X Founder, which is the heroic one, so we'll just skip it. We have Angel flying high. When Angel attacks, all other shield characters must be blocked before Angel dice can be blocked. Well, for that Angel, I want to check the other six-pack. Do I have useful shield characters? The answer is not really. I have another Angel, so that's something. I have Emma Frost, which is not that great, and I have Juggernaut and a Sentinel, neither of whom strike inspiration. I'm still looking at the Professor X for the common. We do have one rare here, though. Excuse me, for the global. Haha. We do have one rare, though. This is She-Hulk, the rare, and she is also, unfortunately, heroic. Now, do we have a heroic card in the other one? I gave heroic sort of a pass earlier. Let's look here. And we do not have a heroic card in the other pack. So I'm only going to go heroic if I'm sure I can use it, and right now I'm not sure I can use it. So she is out. I think my first pick is Professor X, but let's take it in reference to Pack 2. At common, we have Storm Weather Witch once more. We have magic. We have two of her, in fact, Ileana Rasputina. While magic is knocked out, we roll her die. If you roll a character face, return magic to the field. Now, something I like about her is her high defense. We're going to come back to that. Scarlet Witch, Wanda Maximoff. This is the one where she deals one damage to each opposing X-Men character for each other villain you have in the field. We have Marvel Girl. When fielded, she spins each opposing character down one level. Okay, fine. And we have Emma Frost, arch-villain. If your opponent has no villains in the field, prevent all damage to Emma Frost from fist characters. Not very compelling, I must say. At Uncommon, we have Ant-Man Pym Particles again. We have Sentinel Arch-Villain, which is not really worth discussing. We have Mystique Raven Darkholm, who gets +1/+1 for each other villain in the field. Compelling in other sets, not so much here. We have Juggernaut Kurth, with all the U's in there. If your opponent has no villains in the field, each Juggernaut die can block one additional opposing die. Nope. We have the Angel we already talked about. One rare, Ant-Man the Insect World. When fielded, you may pay one life to span Ant-Man up one level. What do I want? Here's what I want. I want to go Professor X in the first pack and Ant-Man Pym Particles in the second pack. Pym Particles gives you some extra defense while attacking, so it'd be hard to ping him off with, say, Magic Missile or something like that. Plus, he gives you that wonderful global ability. Because here's my plan. I'm taking Professor X, I'm taking Ant-Man, and then what I'm doing is I'm waiting for magic to wheel. There are two magics here in my second pack. She should wheel. I should be able to get her. My plan is to ramp up to magic and use things like Relentless to make her unblockable, to have her crazy attack coming through, her 7 attack, and that will help me win the game. Other things I might be on the lookout for include Iceman, but regardless of any of that, this is my plan for this draft. Now, there are other ways you could go, and I certainly want a 2-cost character in here, and I have a couple of them. I have 3 of them in my first hand. Some of those will be gone. But there are so many 2-cost commons that we should have a good opportunity to get, say, Storm. She might wheel. We might get the Ant-Man to get some more dice. We might get the Falcon. But I think you cannot go wrong going classic Professor X ramp, 2-cost to 4-cost to win. This is Dave with the 6-pack, signing off.
Here we are back in the prep area with the Canadian National Dice Masters Champion for 2015, JT. Well, we're doing things a little bit differently this week because we're sort of taking the theme from last week because you took the theme from this week and did it last week. Does that make sense the way I just said that?
Not at all. So okay. Let's keep that and you just try again.
No, I'm perfectly fine keeping it the way it is. We're doing a bit of an undead theme team with Little Cup this week, and I'm calling this team No Heart and Fiends. JT said he didn't get the reference, but hopefully the Care Bear fans out there will understand why we named this team what we did. So I enjoy the fact that this team is built around a specific character from the Uncanny X-Men set. Magneto, Will to Live. We have 4 dice on this card. It's a 5-cost mask, and it's quite possible we're going to get most of these out. If Magneto leaves the field, he goes to your prep area instead of the used pile or dice bag. You really could care less, JT, if I put a blocker out or not.
That's right. Knock him out. Let him through. Doesn't matter. I'm going to have him next turn anyway.
Yeah, and so I'm calling Magneto the No Heart of this team. He's that evil wizard that the Care Bears have to deal with. And his right-hand man is named Beastly on the show. And on this team, it's Beast. Mutate 666, 4 dice on the card from the AVX set, a 2-cost mask. When Beast blocks, draw 1 die and place it in your prep area. Or if he's on his burst face, instead draw 2 dice, place 1 in your prep area and the other in your used pile. When we were playing and testing out this team, your Beasts were just causing so much havoc with everything I was trying to do.
Yeah, well, it makes you think twice about attacking, because you know it just adds to my role for the next turn.
And another character that's really well known in the Care Bears universe is Shrieky, and this is sort of the Storm character on this team. 2 dice on the card, Goddess of the Plains. I love this card from the AVX set. A 4-cost mask. When Storm attacks, reroll each of your opponent's characters. Place any die that does not result in a character in your opponent's prep area. And thematically, it's just like Shrieky just screaming really loudly and just making everyone run for their lives.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but she is a good card, and there's plenty of odds to try and calculate in that, but when she attacks, sidekicks are pretty good shot at being gone, and the rest of the characters 50-50, so maybe you sneak Magneto through and put him in your prep area.
Yeah, anytime you can remove your opponent's big characters and force them to have to pay for their energy or for their fielding costs the next turn, I think it's a good step forward, so I really like Storm's inclusion on your team. And finally here, the other Care Bear thematic character, Dr. Fright, or in this case, Mr. Fantastic, the Brilliant Scientist. 4 dice on the card from the AVX set, 3 cost mask. Mr. Fantastic gets +2/+2 while blocking, which was very beneficial for you. It worked almost like removal, and your global you took advantage of as well. Pay a mask, target character must attack this turn.
Yep, it's what a wonderful card in common, in unlimited, in just within set, it doesn't matter. The global is hugely useful, and that ability, I mean, if you buy them and get them out on the field, 3/7 on level 1, that's pretty significant as a blocker, 3/7.
And you're forcing me to attack all the time with characters I don't want to attack, or with sidekicks, or doing whatever, so there's really many different ways that you can use this global just to either clear my field or remove something big. So the reason we mentioned earlier that he didn't really care if Magneto had a blocker or not is because of one of his basic actions here, anger issues. Target character gets +3 attack and overcrush this turn, and the global pay a fist. Target character gets +1 attack until the end of the turn. You abused that global like crazy during our game, and you add that anger issues to any one of the characters you have on your team, it's going to do some damage. It's a really nice basic action card.
It's great. And the thing I love about it is that it... So what if you don't roll the action face? The global is there. So if you sneak an attacker through, maybe it's just a sidekick, you can pump them up. And let's be honest, you abused it against me as well, but I like anger issues. I think it's a great card.
Oh, it's definitely great. And we're just adding the second basic action card to this team as well. Anger Issues was from Justice League. Relentless is from Uncanny X-Men. Spin this die to a generic energy side. Reroll a character or sidekick die from your reserve pool. It's mainly there for the global. Pay a mask. The target character cannot block. We'll continue on to the team here. Black Manta David is another one that made a bit of an appearance on this team. 2 dice on the card from the Justice League set. 2 cost fist, the villain. If Black Manta is damaged during the attack step and not KO, deal 1 damage to an opposing player. I think it's always good to get direct damage in there.
Cheap fists are great to have. His ability is good.
And those fists are great at fueling the +1 attack. You took advantage of that multiple times. And I was just talking about direct damage. And when you want to buy something like Anger Issues, it's a 4 cost normally, so you'd like to get that down if you could. And Red Dragon, Lesser Dragon lets you do that. 1 die on the card from Dungeons & Dragons, 7 cost bolt, breath weapon 2, pay 2 to deal 2 damage to your opponent and all the creatures. Field Red Dragon for free if your opponent has 2 or more non-sidekicks in the field. The global, once per turn, pay a bolt when you purchase your next action die this turn. It costs 2 less to a minimum of 1, and you deal 1 damage to your opponent. So it helps when you're wanting to buy something like Anger Issues.
Here's the deal with him. The global is great, and the ability is great. The character is great. I didn't buy him in our games, but think about it this way. If you do buy him and get him in the field and you attack with him and Storm and use Breath Weapon, all the characters take 2 damage. So even if characters reroll to maybe level 1 or 2 face, the damage stays with them. So it may be that you're able to remove blockers even if they roll a character face with the combo of Red Dragon and Storm.
Yeah, all that damage adds up, and now that we have added PXG to this team, you're more likely to be able to purchase Red Dragon. Professor X recruiting Young Mutants, 1 die on the card. When fielded, search your bag for up to 2 sidekick dice and roll them, but it's the global. Pay a mask, move up to 2 sidekick dice from your used pile to your prep area. It just allows you to ramp really fast and get more Magnetos purchased.
That's right. Magneto is the win condition. You really only would go Red Dragon if you ran into impervious sidekicks or you know, Storm couldn't get a character face, but PXG helps you get to Magneto. Go figure, right?
We look at the Care Bear stomachs, you know, the Care Bear countdown, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then the rainbow, whatever, just like projects energy from their stomach. Well, that, there's nothing like that in Dice Masters. The closest thing would be from the Justice League set, the Lantern Power Ring energy projection. 2 dice on the card, 4 cost mask, deal 1 damage to your opponent for each opposing villain in play. If it's on the double burst face, also deal an equal amount of damage to each villain. Global, pay a mask, target opposing character gains the villain affiliation until the end of the turn. We didn't use this at all in any of the games we were playing, but I think it's pretty clear as to why you would have it on the team.
Yeah, it's only because it's a common, and if I was playing this team any other time, I would definitely use the Ant-Man Global in that place.
Right, but on this team, it actually seems to work because, I mean, you can give the villain affiliation to someone else on the other side, and it works as removal. It works as direct damage to your opponent. It's just an option if you need it there. And if you roll the masks instead of the character, well, that's not too bad either, eh?
Yeah, and you know, with a mask, a bolt, and another generic energy, you know, it's only a 3 cost because of the Red Dragon Global. So it's here. I haven't figured out how to make it work perfect yet. I'm still trying.
And if you, the listener, have any suggestions as to what we can put in that final spot, because yes, the Lantern Power Ring is certainly the one that would be removed if we could find something else that works. Do you think there's something that works with this team to make Magneto, the Will to Live, this team even better? So leave a suggestion, leave a comment. We'd certainly love to hear from you. So when we're looking at playing this team, JT, Lantern Power Ring, maybe we're not going to purchase, but what are some of the early purchases that you will make with this team?
Beast and Ramp. If you only get 2 masks, then Black Manta and Ramp. When we were playing, I got a couple sidekicks on my second turn, so I bought a Mr. Fantastic and Ramped. But you really got to get to Magneto. So whether that's a turn 2 or turn 3 purchase, he's got to be a priority.
I really enjoyed playing against this team. Magneto just is so much fun if he hits through for unblocked damage. He goes to your prep area rather than the used pile. That is just crazy good. I do have one question, however, and this is off the top of my head here. If the other player had Polymorph, could you feasibly polymorph Magneto out to bring something else in, and then Magneto goes to your prep area?
That's the way I read the card.
That's the way I read the card, too. What's your thought on that? Let us know in the comments. That's the Little Cup team for this week. No Heart and Fiends. JT will be back with another Little Cup team in not too long. It's fun to play, and it's not so overpowered that you're going to just decimate your opponent, but it's certainly competitive enough that you're going to give anyone a run for their money. So
at least in Little Cup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. JT, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, RJ.
And you got to watch some more Care Bears so that you get all the references I just made. Sound good?
Sounds good.
You got kids. I can't believe you've never seen Care Bears. This is the prep area here on the Reserve Pool Network.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to this week's installment of Off the Meta on the Prep Area podcast. As you may know, the Prep Area is moving to a weekly schedule, so you'll be hearing twice as much as me as well. In celebration of this fact, it's time to finish up my time spent dedicated to DC, and what better way to do that than with a character that's been pretty widely mocked as useless up until now? That's right, this week we'll be looking at one of RJ's personal favorites, Booster Gold. This deceptively cocky and secretly cunning character has a reputation to match that of his canon, being widely underrated despite his secret potential, and I'd like to show you why that is. His stats are fairly mediocre for his total fielding cost 4 and purchasing costs, effectively being a less defensive version of an AVX Iron Man. But it's his effect that makes him both a mechanical and thematic marvel. To fully explore this dynamic, we'll be looking at his rare, Booster Gold, High Publicity Hijinks. His effect allows you to send him from the field to your prep area in order to reduce a non-villain's purchasing cost by 1 for the rest of the turn. Considering Booster Gold costs a minimum of 1 to field, this presents as a particularly inefficient ability. However, the real utility comes in his ability to turn 2 cost characters into 1 cost characters. There are currently 3 one-cost characters in the game, and 2 of them are fantastic characters that see tons of play. Booster Gold explodes that 3 all the way up to 50 characters. This means that you can bulk buy any number of 2-cost characters whenever you roll the right amount of energy. This strategy can be devilishly effective with the right characters, such as Black Widow or Beast, and alongside Iceman's Global, you can almost guarantee a full 4 purchases of a cheap Bolt character like Pepper Potts or Human Torch. Timed properly, this is an ability that's going to flood your bag with high-quality characters and provide a silly amount of synergy for you. If you build with multiple 2-cost characters, you can wait until you roll just the right amount of energy and cash in. This ability to lie in wait in the field is sure to catch your opponent off guard, and you're still rolling booster gold the very next turn. You can also use this effect as banked generic energy in order to make a big purchase at a particularly opportune time. It all just depends on what energy you roll, and that flexibility is what makes booster gold strong. This ability is very thematic for booster gold, and makes me quite impressed with WizKid's design, if not their rulings. Booster Gold, just like his comic counterpart, relies on planning and timing in order to be successful. His showboating serves a purpose in this game, inspiring fellow heroes to join the fray while he creeps off the field in order to execute his plans. This cunning nature is perfect for the character and works wonderfully on multiple levels, earning my commendations. What's really interesting, however, is contrasting Booster Gold with the up-and-coming basic action, Big Entrance. Big Entrance provides the same cost reduction to all of your characters, sends them directly to your bag, and even costs less. This allows you to move faster than you would otherwise and makes rushdown strategies ridiculously strong. However, Booster Gold preps himself, can sit around until you roll the proper energy, and also acts as a body in the field. This means you can hold off and play the long game instead of subjecting yourself to your rolls and hoping for the right energy at the right time. Especially since Big Entrance is taking up one of your drawn dice already. It's also worthy to point out that having effects on a body is always strong, and can be the difference between that one extra attacker or blocker and a closely lost game. If you find yourself coming up against a Booster Gold, you're going to want to have some sort of rushdown strategy of your own. You're not going to be able to compete with your opponent's dice efficiency in a long game, so you're going to be best served by rushing him down as fast as you can. Booster Gold's weakness is that he takes time to execute his plans, but once he's set up, you're going to be hard-pressed to survive an onslaught of cheap and vicious characters. You can also try removing Booster Gold from the field in order to tax your opponent for his less than ideal fielding cost, but that might end up costing you just as much, and when your opponent does get him out alongside three or more of the right energy, you're going to find your efforts have all been in vain. If you'd like to see more on Booster Gold and his other iterations, visit the blog section of the Reserve Pool site. I and many others have written up countless articles exploring characters, their interactions, and the community itself. Later on this week, I'll even be bringing you an article on exactly how I would build a team to use and abuse Booster Gold's incredible utility with Make It Meta. Thank you all for listening along, and have a great day.
And it's time for the main event here on the Prep Area on Episode 9, Masks, Masks, and More Masks. And this one, I am a little bit ashamed to admit I had to look up what it meant because I didn't know what Merry Masks and Pippin was referencing, which made my girlfriend mad at me. It made Shadowmeld mad at me. I'm sure all of you who are fans are mad at me now. But you know what? Maybe this team will make up for it, even though I had very little to do with it. It was a great idea. I will give you credit there, though, Shadowmeld.
Thanks. I think this is the one you got to play, right?
It was, and it's a very interesting team because it's based up around making one character super beefy, and it's not a character I had ever used before. Now, this has the blue stripe on it. It's a Halfling Thief Minion Lords Alliance from the Dungeons & Dragons set, yes. Three dice on the card, which is the max you can have of this one, actually, a three-cost mask with the Adventurer affiliation. Experience once per turn, gain a +1/+1 token when you knock out a monster, and on the burst phase, your opponent may not deal damage to this character during the main step. You're going to want to have this character on level 1 or level 2.
I played a team with this team myself, and they had no way to do direct damage during the main step, so you can get him on level 3 if you don't need his ability. Other than that, though, yeah, he's amazing. He's immune to any direct attacks during the main step, and if he's on level 1 or level 2. And because he's an adventurer, even though he's stats like 1-1 or 2-2, you can make that work in your advantage eventually. Some key things about this guy that RJ didn't mention is it's a good character. It has the good alignment, and he also is equipable. He has the equip icon, and his affiliation is actually Minion Lords Alliance. Lords Alliance.
That's not something I would normally play, and I had never played, like I said, before I played this team. So we'll move on. Along with the Halfling Thief is a character that I think many of us have played with. It's the Human Paladin, Lesser Emerald Enclave from the Dungeons & Dragons set. 3 dice on the card, 4 cost shield. He's got the good as well on him. Experience, same thing. While active, your characters in the field cannot be affected by global abilities used by your opponent. Global, pay a shield. Reduce the damage you take from a character's ability to 1.
He also has the equipable icon. The reason he's on here is because he's amazing at preventing globals from affecting your characters. He also has a really powerful global to reduce you. Since we're trying to beef up just one character, if our opponent is going for like direct damage and we haven't gotten our character beefed up all the way, we can start saving shields on our turn to reduce direct damage abilities with the Human Paladin's ability. And that includes things like Jocasta, based on the new ruling. So that global is one of the reasons that he's on this team. He's also an adventurer, which is a backup adventurer in case our halfling gets, you know, Loki'd or something like that.
Let's make this Halfling Thief even stronger by giving it some equipment to equip. First off, the Magic Helmet Paragon Gear, the rare. And it can be equipped to a character with the equipable icon on it. This equipped character takes no damage during the attack step, and we have 2 dice on this card, and it's going to really mess with people when you put it on the Halfling Thief.
Yeah, it really is. The Halfling Thief on a burst phase can't take damage during the main step, and now with the helmet on, it can't take damage during the attack step. So we now have invincible blockers or invincible attackers, so our opponent, if they're going for like an overcrush team, can't do damage to the minions, thus can't overcrush us. So this helmet helps us not be overcrushed and helps us attack willy-nilly into our opponent no matter what.
And let's make it even stronger now, because we can give it the Magic Sword Paragon Gear, also rare. 2 dice on the card, also from Dungeons & Dragons. Characters damaged by this equipped character are knocked out at the end of the attack step.
This sword is amazing, especially if your 1/1 halfling thief is wielding this sword and Hulk comes running at you. Your halfling thief needs to do 1 damage to Hulk and Hulk dies. Now Hulk will take 1 damage, but your halfling thief is immune to damage for that combat. So even though the halfling thief's taking, you know, 10 damage, he's immune to all of it, but the Hulk still dies. Now you have a halfling thief taking down the biggest characters in the game, and we're not even done buffing him up.
I know you are a little bit of a Dungeons & Dragons guy, if not a huge Dungeons & Dragons fan. Does this make you want to try and use a halfling thief, give it a sword and a helmet, and just see what sort of damage it can wield?
It's called a Gnome Giant Bane Stalker, and I've played 2 of them, and they're amazing. Yes, basically.
One moment here.
Nerd!
Moving on. The Ring of Magnetism.
I'm sorry, hold on, before we move on. Are we going to talk about your professional wrestling affection after this?
We are going to completely disregard the fact that I actually stopped rolling dice as part of a wrestling dice game that I was playing so that I could do this podcast based on a Dice Masters game that uses Dungeons & Dragons characters and rolling dice.
Okay.
Ring of Magnetism, Action Attraction, the Uncommon from Yu-Gi-Oh! 2 dice on the card, 3 cost mask. Play on a monster. Your opponent's action dice and abilities can only target that monster.
We talked about this earlier, but one thing we didn't talk about it in the other portion of the podcast is you can actually play this on one of your opponent's monsters, specifically a monster that's giving you a lot of problems, and your opponent is stuck only being able to target their own monster with effects and abilities. So let's say they have the green arrow that when you field him does a bunch of damage to a character, and they also have Constantine. Well, you can put the ring on Constantine, and when Green Arrow comes into the field, they have to kill their own Constantine. And then when Constantine is KO'd, your ring goes to the prep area alongside Constantine. So you're not missing out on as big of a window as they are. It's a really great... There are lots of great things that you can put the ring on, and usually you do it when you don't love them.
Let's talk about the Holy Horse now. 4 costs... Unicorn Paragon Beast. It's a mask character. We have four dice on the card from Dungeons & Dragons. It's the rare. While active, your other good characters get +2/+2. And for the record, Unicorn is good as well.
So we have Halfling Thieves. We have Human Paladins. They both get +2/+2. It makes our Halfling Thief... we bought him for 3, and he's a 3/3/4/4/5/5. That seems like a fair thing. And then if he's, you know, a 3/3, he's immune to damage in the main step. If he's a 4/4, he's immune to damage in the main step. Then we put all his gear on him. He's now like a 4/4 that kills anything that blocks him. He's amazing. And so we can just power into our opponent all day long and kill all of their creatures until... and hopefully get experience because they have monsters and get bigger and bigger and attack and attack and attack.
Let's say you have some problems with what your opponent has in their field. Let's say there are some characters that you would like to remove from their field. How about the Umber Hulk, Paragon Beast, the rare from the Dungeons & Dragons set? We have 2 dice on the card, 5 cost shield. When fielded, reroll all opposing level 1 and 2 characters. Move each die that shows an energy face to your opponent's used pile. Not the prep area, not the KO area, whatever they call it. The used pile.
Yeah, that's just amazing. I really wanted to play this guy on my competitive teams. I found some other cards and other reasons to play other things, but for a while, this guy was on the team that I was playing competitively, and he just does spectacular work at clearing your opponent's board. Sidekicks... When your opponent is forced to reroll all of their sidekicks and send them to the used, that is a devastating, devastating loss to their defensive wall. And it also totally ruins their ramp capabilities because they have just too many dice in their used pile to really pull through all of them. So if they started building a wall of sidekicks, you know, say they didn't have PXG because we're not bringing it, and you send that many sidekicks to the used pile, not to mention the other level 1 or 2 characters, but just that many sidekicks to the used pile, it's just a really full bag that takes forever to cycle through. So he's a really great card for that. I absolutely love him, and he fits the D&D theme.
And the final character on this team from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set, Goblin Attack Force Goblin Squad. 2 dice on the card, 4 cost fist, the uncommon. This monster cannot block. If you are damaged, knock this monster out. Global, pay a fist. Target monster must block this turn.
So the reason this guy's on the team is because we're really only going to have one super pimped out halfling out on the board at a time. But if we get a whole bunch of fists, we can just say, oh, that guy has to block, and that guy has to block, and that guy has to block, and that guy has to block. And then our 4/4 halfling swings out, does 1 damage to each of them, and kills them. It's kind of like when those samurais go dashing across the field and unsheath their sword once and kill everything. That is what our halfling is going to be doing. And this global makes it really easy to get that done.
Now, the first basic action you wanted to talk about was from the Age of Ultron set here, Infiltrate. Target character gets +3D and gains 1 team affiliation of your choice until the end of the turn. What's your thought process for putting Infiltrate on this team?
So a lot of people like to play comic book heroes only and not play a lot of like Dungeons and Dragons characters. So unless our opponent's like playing kobolds, we might not be gaining a lot of experience. Unless we buy Infiltrate, make their character a monster and kill it with the halfling anyway, because then we get experience. Do that for a couple turns and you field all 3 of your halflings. You attack with all 3 halflings and your opponent is now looking at 3 7/7s coming rolling across the board at you, and they have to block. And you don't even have to pay the fist global to make them do it. And if they don't block, you punch them in the face for 7. Then you punch them in the face for 7 more. And you keep doing it over and over and over again, and there's just nothing they can do about it, because your guys are just big, and every time they block them, you can play Infiltrate and make them bigger. So it's just this evolving devastation.
if you have the magic sword equipped as well, I mean, any character damaged by this equipped character gets knocked out at the end of the attack step. So it's, like you mentioned, yeah, you're giving them plus three defense with infiltrate, but who cares? They're getting knocked out anyway, and then you're getting the experience. So makes a lot of sense. Now, the last basic action, we had it on the first team that we talked about today, distraction. We're not going to buy it, but we are going to use the global pay mask to remove one attacker from the attack zone to the field.
So it takes forever for your halfling to get built up and effective. If our opponent is playing like a big rushdown team, you might be in trouble. Distraction helps mitigate that, because if you miss a character to block with, it's likely to come up a mask. And like if you miss Ring of Magnetism, that's two characters you can distract away. If you miss a unicorn, that's two characters you can distract away. So that's a lot of good, solid defensive capability that the distraction provides. And between Ring of Magnetism and Human Paladin, your 7/7 halfling thieves aren't likely to get distracted back. So you should be pretty good.
So we'll talk about this team here one last time. It is called Merry Masks and Pippin. Did I actually even say that at the beginning of this discussion about this team? I honestly don't even
know. Yes, you did. You also admitted that you had no idea what Lord of the Rings was.
No. I know what that is. I've never read the books or watched the movies. I did see The Hobbit, the second one, The Desolation of Smaug, where nothing happens. What a waste of time. Now, that just brought back horrific memories. And so we're going to purge that from my brain. And we're going to talk about what you want to do with this team at the beginning of the game.
Well, quite obviously, you want to get a halfling. But you also want to look at what your opponent is bringing and decide which of the pieces of gear will slow your opponent's initial activities fastest. If you have to get the sword and put it on a halfling just so you can block and kill something disgustingly fast and huge, if you have to get the helmet just so you can block and take no damage, or if you need to get the Ring of Magnetism to stop their control team early, those are some really good options. You can also pick up the Human Paladin early if you need to, but my recommendation is one sword, one helmet, one ring, three halflings, and then a unicorn, and only the Human Paladin if your ring isn't working, or if your opponent has a way to effectively get rid of the ring and still subject you to globals.
This is Merry Masks and Pippin, the main event team here on Episode 9 of the Prep Area. Hey, Shadowmeld, we're out of time, but guess what that means?
Next week?
Yeah, you have to get right back to work. See, if you go back and listen to some of the earlier episodes, you may hear us say, you know, last week we did this and next week we're going to do this. We've always been, up until this point, a podcast that releases an episode every 2 weeks. It changes as of today. So September 8th, the Prep Area is back, and we're on a weekly basis.
Yep. Only, what, three more episodes until War of Light hits, so we got very little time to talk about Age of Ultron still.
And so we are going to take advantage of it while we still can. So on behalf of the nefarious geneticist, I'm RJ Retro. Post on the forums. Post on the comments section of this podcast if you have any comments, and be sure to let us know what you thought, and if you have any suggestions, because like Shadowmeld said, we are running out of time very quickly for Age of Ultron stuff, and pretty soon, it's all about War of Light, so that's all I got this week. Any last comments there, nefarious geneticist man?
As always, if you are having this character you absolutely love and you absolutely want to put on a team, send it to me. I'll make a team out of it. And standard caveat, no common vixen. That's it.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
That's it.
We're not doing it. Yep, that's exactly it. We are never talking about common vixen ever again. Special thanks to Nick Sutphin, who provided our art for this week, and all the contributors of the Prep Area. Most of all, my co-host, my partner in crime, the evil one. I guess that makes me the good one, but that just sounds horrifically wrong. But on behalf of Shadowmeld, I'm RJ Retro. Thanks for listening to The Prep Area. We will be back next Tuesday. Bye for now.
Later.